Would the House please come to order? Would members please indicate their presence by voting? Would all members please indicate their presence? We do have a quorum present this morning to conduct business. The invocation today will be presented by Pastor Jimmy Stringer of the First Baptist Church of Juneau. Would the members please rise?
Almighty God, help us this day. Many decisions are tough, and our minds are full. Only you know what's best for all people. Your thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Help us know the way we should go. Guide our thinking, please. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor Stringer. Representative Willis, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 113th legislative day in House Supplement Number 8.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent the House Journal as certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the House Journal will be approved. Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, may the journal reflect that there are no members excused from a call to the House today.
No members are excused. Do we have guests today for introduction? Not? Brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
No, Madam Speaker.
Do we have messages from the other body?
Message dated May 8th stating the Senate has passed and returned House Concurrent Resolution Number 14, House Bill 39, or CS for House Bill 39, Judiciary, CS for House Bill 140, Fish, CS for House Bill 234, Judiciary. A message dated May 8th, 1995, stating the Senate has failed to receive from its amendments to CS for House Bill Number 9, Finance, namely Senate CS for House Bill 9, Finance, amended Senate. The President appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House to consider the bill: Senator Taylor, Chair, Senator Sharp, and Senator Salo. Message dated May 8th, stating the Senate has failed to receive from its amendments to CS for House Bill 237, Jude, Am, namely Senate CS for House Bill 237, Jude, effective date failed Senate. The President appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House to consider the bills: Senator Taylor, Chair, Senator Kelly, and Senator Adams. Message dated May 8th, stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 5, State Affairs, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 5, Finance. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 93, Resources, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 93, Resources, effective date failed Senate. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 117, Hess, thus adopting CS for Senate Bill 117, Hess, amended House. Message dated May 8th stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Senate Bill Number 135, amended, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 135, Finance, amended House, effective date failed Senate. Message dated May 8th stating the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 142, State Affairs, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 142, Finance. Message dated May 8th stating the Senate has failed to concur in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 123, Finance, namely CS for Senate Bill 123, Finance, amended House, and respectfully request the House to recede from its amendment. In the event the House does not recede, the President appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House: Senator Green, Chair, Senator Phillips, and Senator Ellis. A message dated May 8th stating the Senate has passed the following for consideration: Senate Bill 160, amended by Senators Torgerson and Halford, entitled an act excluding certain employment by students from the definition of employment in the state employment security laws.
I'll stand briefly at ease. Would the clerk please read the previous bill that she had read across?
Senate Bill Number 160, amended by Senators Torgerson and Halford, entitled An Act Excluding Certain Employment by Students from the Definition of Employment in the State Employment Security Laws.
That'll be referred to Labor and Commerce Committee.
I have no further messages from the other body, Madam Speaker.
Do we have communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees.
The Resources Committee has considered House Bill Number 335, Extend Big Game Commercial Services Board, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 335 Resources, with the new title attached as a fiscal note, recommending do pass Davies, Cott, Ogun, and Green. No recommendation, Nikolai and Ostrom, and the report was signed by Green co-chair. House Bill 335 is on today's calendar. The Finance Committee has considered CS for Senate Bill 16, Finance Amended, Increased Land Grant to University of Alaska, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 16, Finance, recommending do pass Mulder, Kelly, Terrio, do not pass Grusendorf, Navarre, and Brown. No recommendation, Foster, Hanley, Parnell, and Coring. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster co-chairs. CS SB 16, Fin-Am is on today's calendar. The Judiciary Committee has considered Senate Bill 154, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending do pass Porter, Green, Bundy, and Toohey. The report was signed by Porter Chairman. SB 154 is on today's calendar. I have no further standing committee reports, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Brings us to citations and resolutions for introduction.
Citation honoring Alaska Federation of Business and Professional Women 50th Anniversary by Representative B. Davis. Honoring Mark Leary, Secondary Social Studies Teacher of the Year by Senator Lincoln and Representative Nikolai. Honoring Lake and Peninsula Aleutian East, Pribilof Islands, and Bristol Bay Native Youth Olympians by Senator Hoffman. Honoring Dillingham and Southwest Region Native Youth Olympians by Senator Hoffman. Honoring Audrey Smith by Senator Adams. Honoring the Village of Alakek, the Village of Alatna, and the Village of Hughes by Senator Lincoln and Representative Nikolai. Honoring Chugiak Mustang Bantam C Hockey Team by Senator Phillips, Halford, and Representatives Willis, Coring, and Cott. Honoring Lower Kuskokwim School District Native Olympians by Senator Hoffman and Adams and Representatives Ivan and Foster. In Memoriam, Patty L. Hyslop by Representative Nikolai and Senator Lincoln. In Memoriam, Charlie Biederman by Representative Nikolai and Senator Lincoln. In Memoriam, Reuben Harrison Hendricks, Jr. by Representative Kabina. In Memoriam, Martha Johnson by Representative B. Davis. In Memoriam, Joseph Davis by Representative B. Davis. In Memoriam, John Parks by Senator Ellis and Representatives B. Davis, Brown, and Finkelstein. In Memoriam, James Frederick Wolf by Senator Halford. In Memoriam, Sophia Lincoln by Senator Lincoln and Representative Nikolai. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction, Madam Speaker.
Do you have bills today for introduction?
House Bill 340 by Representative James by request, entitled An Act Relating to Regulation of Safety Professionals.
That will be referred to the House Special Committee on Economic Development, State Affairs, Labor and Commerce, and Judiciary.
House Bill 341 by Representative Green, entitled An Act Establishing a Tax Court to Consider and Determine Certain Taxes and Penalties Due in Collateral Matters and Amending Provisions Relating to Taxpayer Challenges to the Assessment, Levy, and Collection of Taxes by the State and Providing for an Effective Date.
That will be referred to Resources, Judiciary, and Finance.
House Bill 342 by Representative Roepberg, entitled An Act Relating to Water Quality.
That will be referred to House Special Committee on Oil and Gas and Resources.
I have no further bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please, Representative McLean?
We, Madam Speaker, revert back to introduction of guests.
Without objection, we are under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. There's a very special person in my heart that's here today, and he's a guest page, my son, Upper McLean. Would you please help me in welcoming him?
Further guests for introduction. Representative Hanley.
You want me to wave the...
Go down the calendar.
I guess I need to move down to unfinished business to be able to waive a bill out of committee.
There's no objection. Representative Hanley.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to waive the finance, the House Bill 335 extending the Big Game Commercial Services Board from the Finance Committee, and the members of the Finance Committee have indicated they are willing to do this, as has, I believe, the Minority Leader.
Without objection, that bill has been waived from the finance. We're back under consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Brown?
I wanted to raise a point of order about the daily calendar.
Representative Brown?
Madam Speaker, this calendar was not available. This packet was not available at a reasonable time for the members to review. In fact, Madam Speaker, I believe the calendar came out roughly a few minutes before midnight and was not available to some members until significantly after that point. Madam Speaker,
Representative,
we can't be adequately prepared for the day's business when we don't know what bills are going to be brought up before us. And I just submit to you that we didn't have a reasonable opportunity to read the material provided and prepare amendments and be prepared for this fuller session that we're having today. And I would just note that Rule 18 does say we're supposed to have noticed the prior legislative day of what's going to be heard in today's calendar. And, Madam Speaker, I feel that this is a violation of the rules to have this matter before us when the members did not have proper notice.
Representative Brown, the draft calendar was out by about 10 o'clock p.m. last night. It was posted. This is the last days of session, and this is one of the hassles that happens when we have nighttime joint sessions and things like this back up. But it was posted the previous legislative day.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Thank you for the latitude. I appreciate that it is the last days of session, and I would just plead that in these last days of session, we get a little more notice if possible, and if those calendars could come out, even if the packets aren't available, if we knew earlier in the day what the bills were going to be, that would certainly be most helpful. I don't think it's reasonable to ask members to wait around till 10 o'clock at night. It's just not reasonable.
Thanks, Representative Brown, for your points. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 335 by Representative Ogun, entitled An Act Relating to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, Guide Outfitters, Transporters, and Commercial Use Permit Holders, Extending the Termination Date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board and Providing for an Effective Date. The Resources Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with CS for House Bill 335 Resources with the new title attached to fiscal note, recommending do pass Davies, Cott, Ogun, and Green. No recommendation, Nicolai and Osterman. The report was signed by Green co-chair. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 335 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection to the House Resources Committee substitute being adopted. Would the clerk please prepare the board? Question before the body is the adoption of the House Resources Committee substitute. Representative Brown?
Please.
House briefly stand at ease. Representative McLean?
Speaker, I'll withdraw my objections.
Is there further objection to the adoption of the Resource Committee substitute on House Bill 335? If not, the Resource Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Yes, Madam Speaker. Amendment number one by Representative Ogun, beginning page one. Line two.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This amendment will...
Representative Ogun, you need to move the amendment.
I'd like to move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Ogun.
Thank you for that objection. I would like to leave the title, the date and the title open for basically political reasons to... is to ensure that the bill gets passed out of the Senate side. Thank you.
Madam Speaker, can we have an at ease?
Or I stand corrected.
I need to talk with the gentleman for a couple minutes.
House stand at ease. House come back to order. House come back to order. Representative Ogun, would you like to restate your statement?
Yeah, I'd like to delete that from the record, please. Madam Speaker, the real reason why I want to delete this is from the title because it's not necessary. It's already included in the bill.
Further debate. Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number one, a title amendment? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
33 yeas, 5 nays.
And so amendment number one has passed the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
Yes, Madam Speaker. Amendment number two by Representative Davies, beginning page 10, line 12.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move amendment number two.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This amendment is something that we've talked about, and I've thought about it overnight. And I just think the way, if we don't have this amendment in the bill, that we're setting ourselves up for some real confusing circumstances. And what the situation that I'm trying to address here is that right now there's a requirement that when a guide comes to get the license, that he to operate in a certain area, that he provide a Xerox copy of his permit from the landowner to actually operate in that area. And what we're doing in the bill is we're getting rid of that requirement to show the permission that you have permission to operate in the area. And so, Madam Speaker, I think what's going to happen is we may have the circumstance where the state has given a person a license to go ahead and guide in a particular area, and the person may not have permission to operate in that area, and I think that's just a recipe for lawsuits. So, Madam Speaker, I think that we ought to... What this amendment would do is bring us back to the status quo, to the requirements that we have on the books right now, and not drop that requirement for that. It's just, I think it's really kind of a good bookkeeping situation to just make sure that everyone knows what's going on.
Further debate? Representative Ogun.
Madam Speaker, currently all commercial users of any state or federal lands are required to get permits from the agencies that manage that land, whether it be DNR or the Forest Service, and what we're attempting to do here is these is to stop the Big Game Commercial Services Board from being doing the Department of Natural Resources work. They have their own policing and enforcement abilities, and this would significantly reduce the paperwork. This does not preclude guides from getting permission to use the land, and as a note, we left private landowners in that loop, that they have to prove that they have permission from private landowners, native corporations, or other private land to operate on their land. So we have left that into the loop, and that is a requirement to get their license. Now, why should a guide have to submit proof that they capitulated to another department's demands when they can take care of that themselves in their own department? Thank you.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question, Representative Davies?
Well, Madam Speaker, I guess I just put the question the other way. Why should the state issue a license to operate on a piece of ground when the person doesn't have permission to do it?
Ready for the question? Representative Ogun?
I'm not sure I understand the previous speaker's question. This is a license to practice practice big game guiding, not a license to practice or to go on somebody's ground. I just don't understand the question.
You ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt amendment number two? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
18 yeas, 20 nays.
And so amendment number two fails to pass the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill 335, Resources, title amended, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are under third. The clerk, please read the title for the third and final time.
CS for House Bill 335, Resources, title amended by the House Resources Committee, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, eliminating the requirement for a commercial use permit and for payment of commercial use permits, amending the membership of the Big Game Commercial Services Board relating to the qualifications for an assistant guide outfitter license, eliminating the requirement for testing of assistant guide outfitters, providing for an additional licensing requirements for transporters, eliminating the requirement for prior approval to enter or remain on state and federal land, eliminating the requirement to register base camps, amending the definition of big game commercial services, and providing for an effective date.
Debate. Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 335 does a couple of positive things for the industry, as well as reducing the bureaucracy in the state of Alaska. One of the most significant points of this bill is that it eliminates the testing for assistant guides. Currently, big game guides are just as responsible for every single action that assistant guide takes in the field, as well as the client that he's guiding, not only in civil responsibility and criminal responsibility. So in other words, if an assistant commits a violation in the field, unless the big game guide who's working under reports that assistant, he is just as guilty in the eyes of the law. This is a tremendous hammer that the law has over the guides. Why not let the guides choose whom they want? This is a good bill for rural residents. People in villages that may not be able to pass the test but are excellent hunters, have lived in the area, and have grown up hunting would be fabulous assistant guides. And this merely gives guides the latitude to hire assistants. It eliminates the commercial use permit, which is basically a tax that was put on the industry when the Osacek decision came down from the Supreme Court. It was a tax that was used to pay for the mapping, the remapping. That mapping project is done. One of the things we added, and if we're going to loosen up the abilities for assistants to get hired, we increased the standard. They cannot have a violation for 5 years before, and other where they've been convicted for $500 or more or 5 days in jail. We talked about the permission for submitting the paperwork to get permission on the land. Again, they still need proof of that permission from the land, or they still have to have permission from the land owner. Eliminates the requirement to register base camps. However, base camps are registered in paperwork in a guide's hunt plan that they submit to the board. So protection will still have the ability to determine who is hunting where. And then it eliminates a rather ambiguous term about assistant guides and additional qualifications that are very ambiguous that the board may require. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to inquire further on this House Bill 335 to the representative from Palmer. And one is, on line 7, it says, eliminating the requirement for prior approval to enter or remain on state or federal lands. And the other one is the type of marine mammals that they would be allowed to hunt under the guide outfitting laws.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Currently, there is no commercial hunting of marine mammals, but that was left in because there is a possibility in the future that there would be. And could she repeat the first question?
Your first question.
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. On the title page, it says that we're going to eliminate the requirement for prior approval to enter or remain on state and federal lands, and I don't understand what he's saying when he says that they don't have to have prior approval or they have to have prior approval. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Currently, any commercial operations, whether they're guides, loggers, or any type of commercial operation, has to have prior approval and get a permit from any state or federal agency that is managing that land. All we are doing here is eliminating the requirement to submit that proof to the board to get the license to guide. It does not preclude anyone from getting permission from the land owner themselves.
Further debate? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have a number of questions about this bill. Madam Speaker, why is this bill before us today when we've already passed an extension of this Big Game Commercial Services Board? Why are we now passing another bill? I asked that question, Madam Speaker, and was told that a member of the other body didn't like the bill that we sent over there, and I'd say to that, why doesn't that member get those changes that are needed put into our bill, which is already on the other side, and send it back to us, and we could consider it in the normal course? The changes that are coming in here I was asked to waive those through the Finance Committee, and so I didn't get to bring these questions up and ask these things when the bill should have been before us in Finance. And the first issue I'd like to bring up is the fiscal note. The fiscal note if I'm reading this correctly, says that there's a change in revenues, a positive change in revenues of $321,000. And yet, from the explanations that I've heard, we are eliminating one of the fees, the commercial use permit fee, and that's going to cause an anticipated revenue loss of $58,000 that's now being used for enforcement. And I understand they're saying, well, this was put in place to pay for the mapping, and now that's done, so we don't need this fee anymore. But this fiscal note still doesn't seem correctly written. I don't understand how this legislation is bringing in another $321,000. And I've not heard anybody explain why that's the case, if it is, or if the fiscal note needs to be corrected. Secondly, Madam Speaker, I had some questions about these provisions that deal with the violations on page 6, and there may be at other places in the bill, but those two, which appear to be saying that you shall be given an assistant guide outfitter license to a natural person who has not been convicted of a violation of state and federal hunting or guiding outfitting statute or regulation within the last 5 years, for which the person was fined more than $500 or imprisoned more than 5 days. My question is, why are we having any violations? Why not just put a period there and say they haven't been convicted of violations? Why set this limit at $500 or 5 days? Is that more strict or less strict than current law? And why wouldn't it make sense to just say if you have had a violation, you don't get to have one of these licenses? And the same thing for the transporter licenses. Madam Speaker, I continue to wonder and be unclear about how it is that this whole system that's trying to be preserved in this legislation meets the constitutional obligations. I don't know a lot about the area, but I know we're not supposed to be having these exclusive guiding areas under the constitutional provisions and the decision that was made. And yet I've heard in justification of why we're rushing this bill through that the whole industry is going to crater and collapse if we don't do this and maintain this board, and yet they're not having exclusive areas. I just don't understand it and would appreciate some explanation of why this whole scheme is constitutional.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As far as the violations on page 6 go, these are identical to the requirements that are imposed upon guides currently. So we just simply matched what was already in statute. The exclusive guide areas, we don't have exclusive guide areas anymore in Alaska. They were ruled illegal with the Osage case. And now we have a registration area system, and it's anyone could register into any particular area, and there's some limitations on how long they can stay there and how many areas they have. But they don't own the area, and there's no limitations on who can register. So and it's been highly scrutinized by the Attorney General's office since that case. On the fiscal note, I'm not a fiscal note expert. However, if you'll note that the amounts and the change of revenues go up and down, that is because the licenses are cyclic every 2 years, so they have an increase every 2 years, and the whole program is paid out of program receipts. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Yeah, I just thought I'd respond and answer a couple of the concerns that the member behind me had since they weren't addressed by the sponsor in terms of why this bill is before us today when we've already passed another bill. Unlike this body, Madam Speaker, where we work together with the majority and minority to address title changes and other procedural motions, this other member over in the other body is not willing to subject himself to asking the minority to work with him on a title change and make the changes in that particular bill in the other body. So we're forced to have to do this, and one of the reasons why I agreed to the advancement and to the other efforts that we're making here is to preserve the process. This board serves a very valid function in this state. And for one member to abuse his power to potentially stop this function from happening in the state, I think is ridiculous. So the member that's sponsoring this bill is making a good faith effort to save the integrity of this board process. That's why we're doing it.
Madam Speaker, you're not supposed to speak about the fact that the other body is doing something. The fact that Senator Halford is being a jerk in this case is not pertinent.
Representative Navarre, you are out of order.
Not Representative Barnes, but the two previous members were certainly out of order.
Would the members please remember the dignity and protocol of this body? Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Brown.
Madam Speaker, I still don't think this fiscal note is correct. People are passing me notes trying to explain it to me, and I request Ned East to try to figure it out.
Representative Navarre.
Madam Speaker, I think the reason the fiscal note reflects that there is fiscal impact is because the board sunsets at the end of this year. Since it will sunset, those funds will go away. We're reinstituting them, and that's why the fiscal note reflects it's actually just a continuation of what we're doing now.
Representative Brown?
And what is the source of the fees? How is this an extra fee? Are we repealing? Are they still going to pay a fee? They are?
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 335 resources with the title amended? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
31 yeas, 4 nays.
And so the committee substitute for House Bill 335 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and committee substitute for House Bill 335, resources, title amended, be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause will be adopted. Representative McLean.
Speaker, I'd like to reconsider my vote on House Bill 335.
Representative McLean, do you want to take that up at this time?
No. No.
Representative Navarre?
We have brief eddies.
House stand at ease. House, come back to order. House, come back to order. Okay. Where are we? Huh? Oh, yay. Representative McLean.
Speaker, very much for your indulgence, and I'd like to bring House Bill 335 for reconsideration.
At this time?
At this time.
Without objection, we will take up House Bill 335 under reconsideration at this time. Okay. Representative Brown.
Madam Speaker, during the debate, it has come to our attention that the fee that's being eliminated and the money into the state, that part of that now goes to Fish and Game and Public Safety for enforcement, for Fish and Wildlife enforcement. And those dollars are built into the budget, and they're going to be eliminated. They won't be there, so there's going to be a hole in the budget. And we appreciate your assurance, Madam Speaker, that this will be addressed in some other manner so that the passage of this legislation does not further diminish the capability of those departments. And I feel that that is an important thing to take care of, and would urge that the people involved make sure that that happens.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House committee substitute for House Bill 335 pass the House under reconsideration? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please open the board. Clerk, please tally the board.
34 yeas, 3 nays.
And so House Bill 335 has passed the House under reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on committee substitute for House Bill 335 resources, title amended, be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar? Mr. Minority Leader.
Can we have very brief please?
House stand at ease. Thank you. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill No. 1 by Senators Taylor, Kelly, Halford, Sharp, and Representative Coring, entitled An Act Relating to State Implementation of Federal Statutes. The House Special Committee on World Trade and State Federal Relations referral was waived. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass James and Ogun. No recommendation, Porter, Green, Ivan, and Willis. The report was signed by James, Chairman. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 1, Finance, with a new title, attaches the fiscal note, recommending due pass Mulder, Martin, Purnell, Coring, Terrio. No recommendation, Brown. The report was signed by Mulder, Acting Chair. I have one House Committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee, the House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 1 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the House Finance Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 1 Finance be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. SB 1 will be held for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Representative Cott.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask that we bring up reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 53 this time.
Reconsideration of Senate Bill 53 is in front of us at this time. Representative Brown.
Can we have an at ease?
House briefly stand at ease. House, come back to order. House, come to order. We are under debate, under reconsideration on Senate Bill 53.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Brown.
I call the House.
There is a call on the House. Is there debate?
Question.
Are you ready for the question?
Madam Speaker, I'd like to have the members present before we start the debate.
Representative Mulder.
Speaker, I overlooked the other day disclosing a potential conflict. I don't know of any, but as my wife represents an insurance company and this is an insurance reform bill, I'd like to disclose a potential conflict and ask to abstain from voting.
There is objection. Representative Mulder, you will be required to vote. Representative Brown, could we please begin discussion? We're only missing one or two members. Representative Brown.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, I'd like to focus the body's attention on pages 68 and 69 of this omnibus insurance bill. I've realized that we're now in reconsideration, and considering all the piles of paper on our desk, members may not have these pages available, and I've asked to have those distributed. So if that could happen, is that happening? Is that in process? Progress?
We have additional pages being distributed. No. The bill pages. They're being copied. They are being copied. They will be shortly distributed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, this is a complicated and somewhat technical area, but once I began to focus on what is provided in this appointment of independent counsel, conflicts of interest section, I have some real serious concerns about allowing this to become law. And I want to just take a few minutes and discuss the provisions of this section with the members.
We are under final debate under reconsideration on the entire bill.
Yes, ma'am, and in my opinion, this problem is so serious it jeopardizes my vote on this entire bill, okay. Because while there are some things in this bill that are apparently needed and desired by the Division of Insurance, this provision has significant ramifications on the right of people when their interest may differ from their insurance company's interest. This could be both companies and individuals. This is some very serious matter that we're talking about here, Madam Speaker. I don't believe this has had adequate consideration in committee, and that's why I'm bringing it to the body's attention. And after I've thoroughly discussed it here under third reading, there is the potential that we could consider an amendment. Madam Speaker, there was a decision by the Supreme Court, Alaska Supreme Court, that made some findings about the rights of the insured, the people who have the insurance, and that imposed some obligations on the, or clarified that the insurance company does have an obligation to provide independent counsel. And then if you would look, please, at section 2189-100 there on page 68 at line 11, subsection A, we're saying there that the insurer has a duty to defend an insured under a policy in a conflict of interest that arises. If an insurer has a duty and a conflict of interest arises that imposes a duty to provide independent counsel, the insurer shall provide it. Then, in subsection B, we're defining things that do not constitute a conflict of interest. And so things in B that are not constituting a conflict of interest, as I read this, get you out from under your obligation in A to provide the independent counsel. And item one is of serious concern, a claim for punitive damages. Madam Speaker, whenever someone is charged in a case with punitive damages, there will be a conflict of interest between the position of the person and the position of the insurance company. Because while both of them would like to show that there's no liability, they don't have liability, you know, they didn't do it. If there is some liability, then it's going to be in the insured's, the person, it's going to be in that person's interest to show it really wasn't a very big mistake. There's not much problem there. While the insurance company is going to want to show that there's malice or recklessness or some other serious thing that's going to kick it out from under what they're obligated to give coverage for. So there's an inherent conflict of interest there, and that is a problem when we're defining that as saying, no, that does not constitute a conflict when it clearly does. And then I believe this puts us right in opposition to what the court decision is that says the insurance company has an obligation to provide it. Going on down the bill, Section 3 is an extremely obtuse section, subsection 3 that begins on line 21. I have read this many, many times, Madam Speaker, and it's still unclear to me what it means or what it says. I don't believe I'm not sure what it does, but I don't like it here in the law. I'm afraid it's going to hurt the person who is insured. It's certainly going to be difficult, if not impossible, for the outcome of the coverage issue to be known at the outset. Basically, it does. You're saying here in this section, the following do not constitute a conflict: claims or facts for which the insurer denies coverage. However, that doesn't apply, meaning that it would be a conflict if the insurer reserves the insurer's rights and the outcome can be controlled by the counsel initially. There may be others, and I know the representative from District 17 might be able to help explain this, but I don't, the best you can say about this is, I can't think of anything good to say about it, Madam Speaker. It's very convoluted, and if we're going to have it in here, we should make it make sense. Subsection C, I believe, is directly contrary to this Supreme Court decision that's trying to protect people when they're involved in disputes with their insurance companies, because it's going to limit who you can choose as your independent counsel. And of most concern to me is the requirement that they have to have substantial defense experience. And I know we amended this part yesterday to say general subject area at issue in the civil action. Madam Speaker, one of the findings in this case, in this Supreme Court case, and with your leave, I'd like to read a couple of sentences from that Supreme Court decision where it's talking about the conflicts that come up. Madam Speaker, I don't think I'll read that now. Madam Speaker, what this is saying is that you're not going to be able to have independent counsel. The counsel has to have at least 4 years of experience, and that it's going to be in the same area of the people who are representing the insurance companies. That's the problem. We're limiting it too much to who can be chosen. And in this court case, they find that there's this historic relationship between companies, the insurance companies, and the lawyers that represent them, so that the lawyers tend to favor them in conflict of interest situations. So now we're saying here, we're going to steer you to that group of people. That's who you're going to have to choose for your independent counsel. I think there's also problems, Madam Speaker, in subsection D, that the person now and their attorney is going to get involved in exchanging all this information with the counsel for the insurance company. The independent counsel should be solely concerned with representing the interests of the insured, not with necessarily consulting in all matters with the insurer, because we know that their interests may be very much different and opposed. In subsection E, Madam Speaker, there's problems in that this disclosure does not get to the heart of the matter. You cannot knowingly waive your right unless you're aware of this Supreme Court ruling that says because of their business relationship with insurance companies, these lawyers, these insurance defense counsel, have a tendency to favor the interests of the insurer over the interests of the insured when they're faced with a conflict of interest. So I don't believe this is an adequate disclosure that's provided in subsection E. In subsection F, we have the problem of two independent attorneys, and this section does not say who is going to control the fate of the case and the actions that are taken. It says they both shall be allowed to participate in all aspects of the civil action. And as the gentleman that I mentioned yesterday, Brett Von Gimmigan, who is involved in this Chai case, he points out that having two attorneys, each with a different motivation, representing the same client is particularly dangerous in civil litigation where the insured may suffer personal exposure. Madam Speaker, after looking at these and thinking about the cumulative impacts of all of these together, I would say that this provision appears that it came directly from the insurance industry, who's more concerned about trying to limit the rights of the insured, and it does that. It would very effectively limit those rights of the insured, keep them from being able to get an independent counsel, and I just think that's not a good idea. It's not for the protection of the person who's bought the insurance. And, Madam Speaker, I think this section is poor, and we do not need to have it in this bill.
Further debate? House Representative Elton?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I really don't know what to say, because as it may be a surprise to most members of this body, I'm not an expert in the mundane reaches of insurance law, but information that was distributed yesterday, I think, does raise significant questions, particularly about this section. I guess my caution, Madam Speaker, is as we debate and as we consider this bill, is that we're looking at a bill with well over 100 sections now, It has gone through a process. That process at times was confusing. At one point, we added a 16-page amendment to the bill in the committee. Madam Speaker, I guess my caution to members here is, as we consider this bill or as we consider possible amendments, is that we're talking about a very, very complicated area. It's easy to go with our gut sometimes and say, well, I've received assurances and I'm pretty comfortable with this. And that's kind of the position that I'm in. I'm pretty comfortable with it because I've received assurances from people that I have a lot of trust and a lot of faith in that it's okay. The problem that now arises is additional information was distributed yesterday that raises new questions. And I think that maybe we're at the point where we sit back and we say to ourselves, okay, how much are we willing to take on faith and how much are we willing to take on our knowledge of the bill? Madam Speaker, I guess what I'm saying is if I have to fall back on my knowledge of the bill, I'm not falling back on an awful lot, especially in light of some of the new information. So as we debate this bill and as we think about it, I mean, I hope we keep in the back of our minds that there's a lot here, and I think we should be comfortable with every element of it, and I think the previous speaker has spoken to an issue that does raise significant questions that ought to be carefully considered and perhaps not in the heat of the moment. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the person carrying this bill, I think, previously described that the role we play in legislation such as this is basically trusting the administration. And Madam Speaker, I've been in that position actually on this bill before. I was a person who carried this legislation a number of years ago. Madam Speaker, the concept behind it is that when you get these big bills, the revisers bill, this bill, other these type of omnibus non-controversial bills, is that when you find a section that is controversial, that may not be just the relatively minor adjustments that the rest of the bill reflects, that those sections get taken out. And the reason is it jeopardizes the whole bill. And today, these provisions clearly jeopardize the whole bill. Madam Speaker, we had this legislation in almost all of its same provisions before us in the last legislature. Why did that bill die? It died because a controversial provision was put in and it didn't make it through. The 95% of the provisions which are important, reform provisions, uniform provisions, pro-consumer provisions, those all died along with the one other provision. We've got to separate these issues out. Now, I don't mind a debate on this particular conflict of interest provision, having a bill before us. We have plenty of time over the interim and next legislature to debate it out. And it may be that the member from downtown is right in all points. It may be that there's other factors. It's relatively complicated. And I can't say right now exactly who's right in this. But I do know that this provision threatens the bill. I know that this provision has been out in some versions, in some versions, forgetting which ones are which. This is the one that has drawn the attention. It's got a significant amount of resistance in wherever this bill goes when it leaves here. And, Madam Speaker, I think we've got to follow the routine we do in these big bills. There isn't anyone on this floor, save maybe the chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee, who can, and I doubt even he can, explain everything this bill does. There's a variety of things here that are just every little detail of our insurance code. This one provision, I think, is completely out of sync. It's not the non-controversial provisions the other ones does. It has potential to have some serious impact on our citizens and their relationships with the insurance companies. I'm concerned even how it has risen again before us, and I'd ask members to not support this particular portion. I don't think that it fits the omnibus non-controversial insurance reform act that's before us. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Cabina?
Can I have a brief at ease?
I'll briefly stand at ease. Further debate? Representative Navarre.
Well, Madam Speaker, I guess I would have to ask if someone can explain to me in reading the language on page 68, 2189-100B, that section, which says, for purposes of this section, the following do not constitute a conflict of interest. One, a claim of punitive damages. Two, a claim of damages in excess of the policy limits. Three, claims or facts in a civil action for which the insurer denies coverage. However, this paragraph does not apply if the insurer reserves the insurer's right. The issue for which coverage is denied and the outcome of that coverage issue can be controlled by counsel initially retained by the insurer for the defense of the claim. So I guess I'm wondering if someone could tell me if these do not create a conflict of interest, what does? I mean, what's left? It seems pretty all-encompassing, and if that's what you're trying to say, why don't we just say there shall be no conflict of interest instead of putting this convoluted language in our statutes? Because I submit to you that unless someone can point out some example where one of these would not be the reason, I mean, these are the reasons for conflict of interest. That's one reason, or one concern that I have in this section of the bill. The other concern I have is, as has been pointed out earlier by a previous speaker, and that is, who's going to be the lead attorney? Because there's an inherent conflict, and it's difficult when a individual is going to be held potentially at personal risk to cede any of your authority or responsibility to an attorney who is also protecting the best interests of the insurance company. Because I assure you, when there is a conflict of interest, it's exactly that. The interests are not the same, and I guess it's hard for me to see how they can cooperate when what we're saying is they have to cooperate in a case where there's a conflict of interest. And I can't for the life of me understand how you can accomplish that and still protect the interests of both the parties in that type of litigation. So I'd like to see if we could get answers to those questions if possible.
Further debate? House briefly stand at ease. Come back to order. Scott, thanks. Okay, after I move it to the bottom. House, come back to order. I am going to move the discussion on House Bill or Senate Bill 53 under reconsideration to the bottom of the calendar so the questions can be answered during our lunch break. Representative Brown?
I lift the call.
The call has been lifted. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Lunch
break.
CS for Senate Bill 16, Finance, amended by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the University of Alaska and University Land, authorizing the University of Alaska to select additional state public domain land and defining net income from the University of Alaska Endowment Trust Fund as university receipts, subject to prior legislative appropriation. The Community Regional Affairs Committee referral was waived. The Resources Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 16, Resources, with the same title. Recommending do pass, Davies, Williams, and Green. No recommendation, Ogun, Osterman, and Cott. The report was signed by Green, co-chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 16, Finance. Recommending do pass, Mulder, Kelly, Terrio. Do not pass, Grusendorf, Navarre, and Brown. No recommendation, Foster, Hanley, Parnell, and Coring. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster, co-chairs. I have two House Committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House Resource Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 16, Finance, amended, be considered be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. House, briefly stand at ease. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to withdraw the previous motion. And with that, Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Finance Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 16, Finance, amended, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 16, Finance, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading and place on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held in third for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for Senate Bill 21, Resources, by the Senate Resources Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Penalties for Violations of Commercial Fishing Laws. The House Special Committee on Fisheries considered the bill, recommending do pass G. Davis and Ostrom, and no recommendation Moses, Ogan, and Elton. The report was signed by Ostrom Chairman. The Judiciary Committee referral was waived. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommending do pass Martin, Corin, Grusendorf, Navarre, Kelly, Mulder. No recommendation Parnell, Brown, Ontario. The report was signed by Mulder, Acting Chair. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker. Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 21, Resources, be considering growth to advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held for tomorrow's calendar. Representative Navarre.
Move that CS for Senate Bill 21, Resources, be sent to a special subcommittee chaired by Representative Ogan.
That'll be held for tomorrow's calendar. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for Senate Bill 87, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Membership of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, relating to community local options for control of alcoholic beverages, relating to the control of alcoholic beverages, prohibiting persons from being on premises involving alcoholic beverages under certain circumstances, relating to the definition of alcoholic beverage, relating to purchase and sale of alcoholic beverages, relating to alcohol server education courses, and providing for an effective date. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 87, CNRA, with the same title, recommending do pass VZ. No recommendation, Osterman, Ivan, and Koth. The report was signed by Osterman and Ivan, co-chairs. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House CS for Senate Bill 87, Judiciary, with the same title, recommending do pass Porter, Vesey, Finkelstein, Bundy, and Toohey. No recommendation, Green, amend B. Davis. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. I have two House Committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 87, Finance, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the House Judiciary Committee substitute will be adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
There's an amendment being duplicated, Madam Speaker.
House stands briefly. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If you could give me latitude to describe my amendment, I could introduce it while it's being reproduced.
Please continue, Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The amendment's one I offered in the Judiciary Committee. What this bill does is it takes the board and has three public members and two members from the alcohol industry, the liquor industry. And, Madam Speaker, what this amendment does is says for the board to meet that at least two of the members there have to be members from the public, those public members already designated. It doesn't redesignate any seat. It just says that of those members that make up a quorum, that there has to be two from the public. And the reason, Madam Speaker, is that the intent of this bill, which is to make sure that public members are the majority of the committee, three out of the five could be defeated in a situation where you have the two members from the liquor industry plus one member from the public, thereby giving the majority to the non-public members. I thought just to be consistent, we ought to require that for a quorum you have at least two members there from the public, and that's all the amendment does, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would rise to speak against the amendment, even though I haven't seen it, but I believe what the maker of the motion is attempting to do is to give two people on a five-person board the right to veto any action of that board. That's what the amendment would do. If you have a five-person board, three of them are public members, and the quorum has to have two of the public members on the board, that means you have to have two out of five have to be public members, two people who are industry members, and one person who is a public member could not conduct business. Any two public members of that board could veto the entire action of the board. Madam Speaker, there's just no point in having a board if you're going to structure one in that manner.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you. I have some of the same concerns the Majority Leader, believe it or not, just stated. However, I guess I would ask the maker of the amendment, is there any other case or any other boards or commissions that we have this type of a requirement? It seems to me that, I won't say that. I just wondered if there is any requirement like that sets some sort of a precedent.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, I'd have to go through the various boards to find it, but it's commonly discussed. We've had the same discussion on many other boards. It's just a question of what it takes to make up a majority. And Madam Speaker, the majority leader, I don't think, is right. No one member has a veto. If you've got the two public members there, and you've got the at least one member from the alcohol industry, it's one member would have a veto. I suppose one member could then say something couldn't go through. The key here is having a system that emphasizes the public members. All this amendment says is that to be consistent with the rest of the bill, that you can't make a decision without having the majority of the members there, or at least two of them, because it could be 2-2, at least half of the members there are going to be the public members. And, Madam Speaker, this is a regulated industry. We all know all the controversies that come before the alcohol industry. These liquor licenses are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases. I don't know the latest prices. They're extremely valuable, and there's a massive self-interest involved by, or not self-interest, but there's a clear special interest involved by members of the liquor industry who serve on it. Now, I think it's appropriate to have some members of the liquor industry serve. I think they provide an expertise on how these issues are handled, but if you wanted an analogy, it'd be to our own ethics committee. We do have legislators on the ethics committee, just as we have liquor industry people here, but they cannot make a decision on the our own ethics committee unless the majority of members there are the public members. That's just how the statutes are set up.
Representative Finkelstein, before you continue to your debate, we do have the amendment in front of us. Would you move the amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's just a matter of a regulated industry for the public good, and the kind of issues that end up before this group are very critical issues that almost always are centered on public good versus the sort of individual needs of a licensee who's attempting to make money selling alcohol. Because of that, we've decided in the past, and I believe in this legislation, that the public good comes first. All this amendment says is that the public good comes first.
Representative Porter.
Speaker, I don't believe members of the industry have failed to lose their status as members of the public. But be that as it may, the reasons cited by the majority leader are precisely the reasons why that amendment failed in judiciary. Two people should not have the ability to absolutely control a five-person board. And the analogy to the ethics committee is too much of a stretch. That is established in law to be dominated by public members as opposed to legislative members, and it's in the statute as to what constitutes the subcommittees and the main committees, but it does not say that X number of members of the public as opposed to the legislature must be present to make votes. It just says a quorum of the committees as established by the original legislation. This, of course, would totally subvert the intent of the original establishment of that board.
Further debate on amendment number one. Are you ready for the question? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to declare a conflict of interest since I am part owner of a liquor license.
Mr. Minority Leader.
I, too, Madam Speaker, would declare a conflict because I do own a liquor license. However, I'm not asking not to vote because I think I'm not affected by this. But I just wanted to point out, I think the Majority Leader was right when he said, effectively, you're giving the power to two public members to veto anything, because if they don't like any issue that's before, all they have to do is walk out of the room, subsequently losing the new quorum that's established that this amendment would do, and this allows the board to conduct business. And I think further that by nature of this amendment suggests that industry representatives are only there for their own personal good and not to look out for the public. And I would suggest to you that the alcohol industry is one of the heaviest regulated in the state, and they do make very conscientious decisions. There are more guidelines and requirements because the stricter things are and the more control there is over this industry, the more likely that someone in the liquor industry is not going to get sued for making mistakes. So I would suggest that the nature of this is saying that the members from the industry are not capable of doing decisions that are in the best interest of the state. I disagree with that. I think clearly, and I would like to ask if there's one problem that has arisen due to the fact of this great influence of industry members, I would suggest I don't recall any. And I think this is a stretch of what this legislation is trying to accomplish. I would oppose the amendment.
Ready for the question? Wrap up, Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The member preceding me was clearly out of line in trying to attribute to me some motivation towards these particular members. All I said and all I will ever say in the future is that they are representatives. They are the people who are representatives of the liquor industry. That is different than public members. And if somehow that point's being missed, it's not because of anything I've said. As to past problems, I don't know what the member has followed before, but in Anchorage, I could give you a list of 30 or 40 major problems that have come up in the last 10 years before the ABC board. Major, major problems. They're transfer of liquor licenses by and large. Any member from Anchorage, and especially from Mountain View and Fairview, who's followed these things could describe you ad nauseum what's involved in these licenses. It's a lot of interaction with the local municipality, and there are major, major controversies. And the votes are split. The votes are rarely unanimous. The votes are split. But I certainly would agree that there's nothing inherently wrong with a member who's representative of the alcohol industry. In fact, the chair for many years was a person who was a friend of mine who was from the alcohol industry who I believe made a series of great decisions. I don't think that just because you're from the alcohol industry means you're going to make bad decisions. But all this amendment does is try to be consistent with this bill. This bill, not me, not this amendment, this bill has decided that we're going to add a new provision to law. And that new provision to law is that three members, the majority of the ABC board, have to be public members. That's not now the law. That's what this bill does. And so the idea that I'm being inconsistent isn't the case. All I'm trying to be is consistent, that when these decisions are made, that the majority of members who are there making that decision, those as well be representative of the publics, not just the board at large. I don't disagree with the general feelings of people that we've had good ABC boards in the past, and I'm certainly, last thing I'd be doing is impugning any of the members of the board in the past. I've been happy with some decisions, unhappy with others, but I just believe that the theme of this bill ought to be followed, that when decisions are made on alcohol, which is an extremely controversial subject in our society, in our state these days, that those members be, who are making the decision, the majority of those members be representatives of the public for the good of the public, not representatives of the regulated industry.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Would members please proceed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk, please tally the board.
9 yeas, 30 nays.
And so Amendment Number 1 fails to pass the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 87 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That'll be held for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. House stand at ease. House, come back to order. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
CS for Senate Bill 130, Rules by the Senate Rules Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Marine Pilots and the Board of Marine Pilots, extending the termination date of the Board of Marine Pilots and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass. Foster, Hanley, Mulder, Martin, Parnell, Corrin, Grusendorf, Kelly, Terrio, and Navarre. No recommendation, Brown. The report was signed by Hanley and Foster, co-chairs. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 130 rules be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held for tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill 154 by the Senate Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to an Aggravating Factor at Sentencing. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, attached to zero fiscal note, recommending due pass. Porter, Green, Bundy, and Toohey. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 154 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill 172 by the Senate Rules Committee, by request, entitled An Act Eliminating Monte Carlo Nights as an Authorized Form of Charitable Gaming and Providing for an Effective Date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommending do pass. Porter, do not pass. Finkelstein, no recommendation. DZ, Green, and Toohey. The report was signed by Porter, Chairman. There's an amendment being duplicated, Madam Speaker.
House briefly stand at ease. Is it ready? House come back to order. We're in the process of waiting for an amendment. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The amendment is extremely simple enough.
Representative Finkelstein, would you move the amendment?
Well, Madam Speaker, if I could describe it first, it's to change the word January 1st to March 1st on the effective date.
Representative Finkelstein, if you want to offer the amendment, it needs to be moved.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, this subject, Monte Carlo Nights, is a big subject. The reason the January 1st date has been picked, as described to me by proponents of this legislation, is attempt to try to eliminate Monte Carlo Nights in the near future, thereby affecting the Indian gaming issue. But apparently the January 1st date is nothing magical. The word we've gotten from the Attorney General is that the sooner it's in effect, the more effect it might have on the determinations on what's allowed in Indian gaming. But there is no magic date. November, January, March, whatever it is, there is not a date that it has to occur by. Madam Speaker, we have to think about one of the... there's a variety of entities that occur... that use these permits. One of them is the Fur Rendezvous in Anchorage, which occurs before March 1st. So I'd suggest one of the reasons for this change is that some of these events, which are already planned, already underway, which are major fundraising activities tied to the Iditarod, to the Fur Rendezvous, for others, are in place, and we are pulling out the rug from them by picking a date of January 1st. The second reason, Madam Speaker, is that the approach we've seem to have adopted a number of areas in gaming is to hold off and see, allow the commission that we just approved the other day to make its recommendations, come back before the legislature and see what happens. We don't know what the story is going to be on this particular issue, the issue of Indian gaming. And regardless of where you stand, and we are going to have probably different interpretations and different understanding before us early next session than we do now. By picking a date of January 1st, we eliminate the possibility that the legislature, that things will change and the legislature might choose to reauthorize this activity or authorize it in a different way or pick a new effective date. I think we ought to pick a date that allows us some latitude if there is something that comes out of the commission to take some action in the legislature. January 1st is timed in a way that precludes any sort of action by the legislature at that time. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As the drawer of the short straw, I will say I wish that I could support an amendment that extended this to the year 2000, but the reality is, without debating the bill, that there is a compromise reached in this particular date, as this particular bill would eliminate Monte Carlo. The compromise, the date is established with the best intentions of the administration and the Department of Law in their compromise to having this in place for a limited length of time so as not to endanger too seriously their negotiation position on the Indian gaming issue. I cannot tell you specifically why this date is better than March 1st. It just is that within their judgment, and it is their area of concern, they support this date, and I would ask members to support it also.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I rise in opposition to the proposed amendment. Madam Speaker, because of the pending application of one particular entity, I believe there is a very short window of time to close this portion of Alaska's law that deals with Monte Carlo Night. I believe to expand the date beyond, as a matter of fact, I think the date that is in here is too long. And certainly to expand that date to a later time would put in jeopardy the whole question of gambling, wide open gambling in Alaska.
Further debate on amendment number one. Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. If I had my others, I'd put no date at all on this because I still think we're in problems where you try to adjust a situation for one group, such as Monte Carlo or a cruise ship or whatever it may be, and at the same time fail to negotiate, and it's been brought up to a number of times, with the native groups, the governor or legislature fail to negotiate, then that is a major item that they can use to show that we or the governor are not negotiating with them, but at the same time, we're adjusting other laws that would be more more open to gambling and or closed to gambling, whichever you want to do, Monte Carlo or cruise ship. So I think that the more we open this amendment to a longer period of time, the more trouble there's going to be. There's an excellent article. I don't know how many people read it in the Anchorage Daily News. Matter of fact, they've had three large articles now, but Sunday was an excellent article that really put down one, two, three, four. Here's your rules. I don't know who the person was or who the advice they got, but did an excellent job showing your parameters. And it certainly showed that the federal court, district courts, are very open-minded when it comes to allowing Indian gaming in any place they want to game on. And if you allow anything that is considered in Tier 3, and Monte Carlo Nights are in a Tier 3, so a cruise ship, any casino gaming, then the native people have every right to fight for equality. And that's where the issue is, even on a short time base. I wish this was no date at all. I thought this would be an immediate repeal. For the people's body, we checked out with the Department of Gaming, and they showed us there were 64 people who have permits. A lot of these are service clubs, whether they be the Elks, whether they be the Lions, whether they be the Deferred Rendezvous, I guess, is the biggest. But of those 64 permittees, there was a total of $74,000 raised in 1973.
Representative Martin, would you please confine your comments
to the amendment? Well, to confine this here, that when you talk about just a little thing, just one little group having the right to raise $11,000, then you're talking about the other people saying that we don't care if it's for one day or 20 days. We want equality. And I, as an Indian leader, for my people, say that we should be allowed for one day or 6 months until March. Then once you get that in, I want the equality up for how many every year do I want grandfather rights? The thing is, I think we have to take a stand now as a legislative body for the long term. Do we want to subject ourselves to a situation where the governor has no choice but allow Indian gaming because we will not take a stand on other issues like Monte Carlo night?
Representative Bundy.
Madam Speaker, I rise to support the amendment, having been long involved and supportive of the Greater Anchorage Incorporated and the Fur Rendezvous. I've been given information that this is the main source of income for them, and without that opportunity for their Monte Carlo, they would essentially be bankrupt. Would have been last year, and probably would not have had a Fur Rendezvous as we've known it for those many years. More importantly, I think, the precedence has been set.
Representative Buddy, confine your remarks to Amendment Number 1.
I am talking about the amendment and whether it makes any difference if we sunset it immediately, January 1st or March 1st, which is the more humane thing to do. The precedent's set. It doesn't make any difference when we sunset it. This issue will be fought in the courts, and I think the most humane thing we can do is allow a very important part of winter in Anchorage to survive one more year with their Monte Carlo and sunset it on March 1st.
Further debate on Amendment Number 1. Representative Willis.
Madam Speaker, I would like to declare a conflict on this whole question. I serve on a board of directors of an organization that does rely on Monte Carlo for raising funds.
There is objection. Representative Willis, you will be required to vote. You ready for the question? The question being? Representative Finkelstein, and wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will restrain myself in responding to the members who are arguing for the legislation. I will just state that there are many arguments against it, and we will hear those tomorrow or whenever we take up this bill in third reading. But, Madam Speaker, the key to this is even if you don't believe in this legislation, such as, in fact, I don't believe in this legislation, still it comes down to what difference does this exact date meet? And I did ask that of the Attorney General, and what I was told, which I believe the chair of the Judiciary Committee confirmed, is that there is no magical date. that if you, that July 95 would be somewhat better than October 95, which would be somewhat better than January 96, which would be somewhat better than March 96, which would be somewhat better than July 96. It's all sort of an area where they're going to be able to say, no matter what it is, that we are eliminating or phasing out, which it's close to either one, Monte Carlo nights. In the world of negotiation, it's going to be the same whether it's January or March. At this point, I do believe this is the more humane thing to do for the groups involved and the more logical thing to do so we know the results of the Gaming Commission before we have sunset it. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Cott? Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Navarre? Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk, please tally the board.
20 yeas, 19 nays.
And so amendment number 1 passes the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 172, amended House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. That will be held for tomorrow's calendar in third. Mr.